Hi, this is Steve, and we are very excited to be back from vacation and bring you this new episode of The Sailing Road. Unfortunately, we had a little problem with the sound quality on this episode, and we did not realize it until we had recorded the whole show. Unfortunately, we just do not have the time to go back and re-record the whole show because I am taking off traveling again. So here is the show, flaws and all. We'll do better next time. In this episode of the Sailing Road Podcast, we are celebrating Father's Day by interviewing the man responsible for my love of sailing, my father's Mike Payment. We'll also have some sailing news for you, and our product of the week is a great reliable source of power at anchor. All that and more on the Sailing Road. Welcome to the Sailing Road. If you have ever dreamed of sailing off over the horizon, or if you just like to cruise the coast or your local lake, then this podcast is for you. We share the dream to one day cruise full time. In the meantime, we enjoy our weekend coastal cruising as we build our experience and our cruising funds. My name is Steve Payment, and I am joined by my beautiful co-host and fiance, Brandy Bryant.
Wow, I upgraded to having co-host as well, huh?
Yeah, you get a new update. I took away the funny quip about you because I couldn't keep thinking up new and interesting things.
It was starting to boggle your mind, huh?
It was getting harder to come up with new descriptors, but I'll think of something in the future.
Well, as long as I stay beautiful, I guess that's all that matters.
Absolutely. So we are back.
Hello, hello, people.
After a month of being away.
It has been forever.
Yeah, this has been our first weekend at home since May 7th, so well over a month. And we started off on a cruise, so we took a seven-day cruise, and that was two weekends. And that was a great time, actually. It was fun. It was a big cruise line, actually the world's largest cruise ship, the Oasis of the Seas Royal Caribbean ship.
Yep, beautiful boat.
But it was fun. It wasn't a sailing trip, but we do so many sailing trips on our own, so it was nice to just take a vacation where we didn't have to think about anything.
Did a lot of letting other people do it for us.
Absolutely, let the captain drive the ship. But it did fuel our cruising dreams because we got to go to some pretty cool ports. We went to Nassau and St. Thomas and St. Martin,
St. Martin was our favorite.
Yeah, and they, all of which had great, you know, sailing boats and lots of cruisers around, so we got to see all the cruising
beautiful
boats.
Beautiful water.
Yeah, gorgeous water. So
made us realize we like our boat better.
Better than what?
The big old Oasis ship.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
We like to sail. We like to be doing things just ourselves without all the people and the constant eating and craziness.
Yeah. We enjoyed the cruise, but I think 7 days was a bit much, too much eating, too much drinking. We don't do that much of that normally, and you just feel like constantly you want to get your vacation worse. So I think from now on we'll have probably a much more relaxing vacation. So maybe we'll just get a charter with a captain so we don't have to do all the work.
But there you go.
So we'll have some fun there. And then right after that, we came back, and I think the following weekend after we got back from the cruise was Memorial Day weekend.
Which I don't even know. That was like a very last-minute trip. We didn't even really plan anything for Memorial Day weekend because we didn't know if we were going to come home and just be exhausted or if we were going to come home and just want to get on the boat or what our thought process was going to be. But we got home, and literally I think we decided Thursday that we were definitely going to go and pack the boat up on Friday in, 3 hours?
Yeah.
Which we don't suggest doing, especially if you don't normally do that, because we forgot lots, which...
That's all right.
But that was another... okay, but hey, we had a blast.
It was another one of those trips where we just decided to take off now, just go, pack the boat quick and go, and actually we went, I think, a night early. We got in...
Oh, that's right.
Evening.
We got in. Did we get in Thursday night or Friday night?
Yeah, I think we left Thursday night.
We did.
Showed
you're
up
right.
Late
that's and, why we packed so quickly.
Right. So but it turned out we went over to Ponce Inlet in the Daytona area, which I think we've talked about in the podcast before. It's a good weekend spot.
Oh, I know.
Spot.
Sorry, I'm going to cut you off. I know what it was. You were in Jacksonville, and you got home, and you looked at me and said, hey, you want to just go now? And I said, oh, of course I do. What kind of question is that anyway? Do you want to get on the boat now, or do you want to sit at home and do nothing for the rest of the night?
Yeah. We made it happen.
We made it happen.
So we got that done. So we had a great weekend over in Ponce Inlet, hanging out with friends.
No sailing. We didn't even put the mast up. The winds were kind of fluky, and when the winds were good, we were
having a good time and didn't want to leave.
Raft up with all our friends, and if we left our spot rafted up, immediately somebody would have taken our spot, and so we just didn't bother. It was more of just hanging out in the boat type of weekend.
Yeah, we were over in an area of Ponce Inlet that's called the Disappearing Island area, which is basically just an island, and everybody anchors off, and the island appears a lot, and then at high tide it kind of shrinks the island down and you're in deeper water, but it was a lot of fun. It was relaxing, but we didn't get any sailing in, which fueled us to really want to get on the boat to get some sailing done.
Yeah, so what did we do the next weekend?
We did no sailing. The next weekend, our partner, I don't know if we have ever spoke on the podcast about our Lake Conway Wipeout event that we used to do. I guess we did it for about 5 years. 3 years, it was a charity event where we raised money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. And our partner who did that event with us has kind of ventured off and did a thing called Adult Summer Games, which is just a very low-key, adult-oriented, kind of like a...
Yeah, they're couples games.
Couple duo challenge against about 5 to 10 couples that he does. So it was kind of fun, and we always like to support him in the little things that he does, too. So we went out there, actually not planning to take the boat, and of course, once again, Steve got home from Jacksonville and said, "Hey, you want to just take the boat?" And, duh, of course I want to be on my boat and go for the whole weekend. So we ended up packing up very quickly Friday night, drove out. No. We got up early Saturday morning and drove out and stayed the night. So it was just a one-nighter, but
right.
It was fun. We have a great boating crew that we hang out with. So whether we're sailing, motoring, sitting on an anchor, we have a lot of fun. So.
And I'll put some video together on that. I think that'll be a pretty quick... I shouldn't... God, why am I...
Yeah.
I should not promise any video.
We have video on that, so you might see it.
Yeah. But the adult summer games are fun. They're all kind of innocent couple games. They're just fun.
It's quirky.
Yeah, quirky games that they all paddle around, do crazy stuff. So you'll see some video on that when I eventually get it up there. And then immediately the weekend after that...
We were in Chicago with my son Christian for the America's Cup.
So we just, that was kind of something we had planned a while back and we talked about on the podcast. It was kind of an excuse to get up to Chicago. I have a number of friends that live up in Chicago that I haven't seen in over 15 years, and or just seen them briefly. And so wanted to get up there and see them, and then also to see the America's Cup. We've never seen these foiling catamarans in person. So we went out all weekend and had some good time just running around Chicago and seeing that, but you know, going up to see the races. And I think the interesting thing, if you've been watching these races on TV, sailing has always struggled being a spectator sport. And
I understand why now.
Yeah, I've never really saw an America's Cup or any kind of sailing event like that in person. And it really showed how difficult it is to make it a spectator sport, because even in person, they had one large screen up that you could watch the races on. And then the only thing you could really see of the races from the shoreline was one mark, unless you had super VIP access to get up on some of these really tall bleachers and other things.
Or out in a spectator boat, which you had to have a pass to be out on those spectator boats too, to get close up and personal anyway.
There was less than 100 people on the spectator boat that was out in the course. So we, we enjoyed it. It was really interesting to see, but you really saw very little of the race in person. And, you know, I don't like going to an event where you're watching the whole event on the screen, because I could do that at home.
Right.
And the problem was, in person, I even felt they could have done a better job with the screens. They probably need multiple screens or cut the screen in half where you could see an overview of what's going on in the race, and then also show all the views from where the people on the boat are, you know, what their view is, from behind the boat, from above the boat, all these different things. So they have some work to do there, but it was still fun.
I was definitely confused. Being a person who hasn't paid much attention to that type of racing, I was asking tons of questions. Well, why is that boat going that way and that boat's going that way? Well, Brandy, they're tacking different directions. Yeah. I definitely agree that seeing it on the screen was a little bit more helpful, but it was fun. They had tons of entertainment going on. They had a constant two guys talking about the race and what was going on with the race. It was cool listening to them and hearing them talk about the spectating of it. So that was fun. We had a good time. It was hot as balls. I don't know if anybody is from Chicago who listens, but last weekend in Chicago, literally Friday and Saturday, it was 95 degrees. Now, okay, yes, we come from Florida. We're used to it. But I was expecting some cooler weather. Then guess what? We wake up on Sunday, it's 67 for a high. What the heck is that?
That's northern climates. They
That's insane. And another thing that I was just shocked about was the Lake Michigan water. Beautiful. Super clear. When we were out on his friend's island packet sailing on Saturday, the water is absolutely gorgeous. It's clear. It's clean. There are no critters. Unlike the water in Florida, where if you go to the ocean, you have sharks and jellyfish and alligators in our lakes that we have to consciously always be aware of. And there was nothing. Now, granted, this Florida girl would not get in the water because I put my toes in and it was freezing.
Yeah,
it was
cold.
So cold. I was shocked. I had no idea. I guess I, you know, just don't think twice with living in Florida, but the water was absolutely beautiful up there.
The water was probably still in the 50s. So that we didn't talk about that. So on Saturday, the great thing about having friends in town, a good friend of mine who we grew up in the yacht club in Michigan together, and our families both had boats, he now has a Island Packet 36 right on the coastline of Chicago. So he took us out on Saturday.
Beautiful boat.
Yeah, gorgeous boat. It's only a couple years old, and just it was a lot of fun to go out and sail on. And I'd never sailed on, you know, I've been on Island Packets and boat shows, but I'd never taken one out sailing, so that was a lot of fun. And
I've never been on one, so.
Yeah, we went out in the Spectator fleet on Saturday, and I thought, well, that might be interesting. You get a little bit better view. It was worse than the shoreline.
It was packed on the boat in the Spectator.
We were probably several rows back because we got there a little bit late, and even the people on the front line, you're sitting on the water. All you can really see is the mark that's right in front of you. And so, once again, you know, spectating from the water, it was more of a party on the water than anything else. It really didn't help you in viewing the race. The other problem is they have this app that you can follow, and I've been following the races on this iPhone or a smartphone app. And it worked really good when I was sitting in Orlando and the races were going on and I'm watching on TV. But when you're there in Chicago and everybody in the local area is running their smartphones, the network was crammed and the app never worked all weekend.
Yeah.
So, you know, you
definitely
could at least,
a complaint there.
You could at least, you know, watched it on the screen, you know, going over, but that didn't even work. So it would have been better. Actually, we rewatched the race. NBC showed it this weekend. Yeah, the week after the race. The replay, and it has all the graphics on the screen, and it was really easy to follow that. So I think it's definitely a TV sport more than an in-person sport, unless they can figure out a way to get people really high up in the air to watch it.
I have to say it was neat seeing the capsizes, though. I mean, I know that's not neat, and I shouldn't say it is neat, but just to see it actually happen, because we could kind of see that from where we were on the pier. But to know how they actually pull the boat upright, where they're really not pulling the boat, it's the wind catching the sail and the sail, you know, just taking off and actually uprighting the boat. That was really neat to see and to figure out how they actually get the boat going again. So that was cool.
Yeah, we saw two capsizes.
Two capsizes, if you haven't watched it.
They haven't been capsizing that often, so to have two in one day, that was kind of unusual and scary because they're
going fast.
When that hull gets up in the air, it's I forget how far that they look like they're probably 30 feet across. So, you know, you're 30 feet up in the air and dangling, you know, trying to slide down the trampoline to get
I'm
to
sure
the bottom
they
side.
Do mock trials with right?
I don't know, but they did a good job. Nobody got hurt. And
I think Friday was our best day, though, because Friday was the practice races, and it wasn't nearly as packed on Friday. Friday we got there pretty much right when it started, and it was just a lot more low-key, less people. You could stand on the railing and actually see better for what you could see when the boats were on that side of the water. But Saturday and Sunday were packed. Well, Saturday we don't know. Saturday we were on the boat, but yeah. Sunday it was packed. By the time we got there, I mean, there was just seven people deep against the railing. You couldn't really see. So if you moved your spot, you lost your spot. There was no getting back to it. But
and that was another problem on Saturday. You never know what these – one of the problems when they had the races in New York is they had almost no wind, and they were pretty much just sitting dead on the race course a lot. And Saturday, you know, we kind of took our time sailing out there, getting out to the race course. And by the time we got there, I think they had just finished
one race.
And then they had to cancel the races for the day because they just couldn't get enough wind.
I think the buildings were blocking the wind.
It was just a bad day for wind. It was maybe in the direction that it was coming from. But, because we left the spectator fleet, and then we sailed back. We had about 11 knots of wind.
We had a great sail back.
Yeah, so. We had a good wind. So they definitely have some work to do. The fact is that when the America's Cup goes to Bermuda, nobody's going to Bermuda. I mean, the very elite and the VIPs and everybody will be there, but it's not going to be, you know, a big contingent from the United States going over there. So
they definitely needed more like bandstand style bleachers so that you
got to get up in the air.
Have more people be able to see up in the air to see it. So. Yeah.
So when it's in Bermuda, everybody can watch on TV, and you'll have all the graphics.
But the Navy Pier is beautiful. I have to give that to Chicago. It's a great little feature in the city.
Yeah,
we get away from all the concrete inside of the city with all the buildings. Which, coming from Orlando, we have maybe 20 high-rise buildings in our downtown. There's 20 on one block.
Yeah, it's huge. So we do recommend Chicago's a great town. If you've never been there for a weekend, go check it out. Lots to see. The food is amazing. Any kind of food you can imagine is just incredible. And they've got some great museums, too. We went to the Field Museum on Sunday.
Which my son absolutely loved.
Yeah, it was as good as any of the, you know, the Washington or New York museums that I've been to. So they've got some really good stuff going on.
I think we were there for what?
Chicago.
2 hours and could have stayed for another 2 hours.
Oh, easily. So. Easily could spend the whole day there. So that's about it for the travel that we've been doing. We've got the 4th of July weekend coming up and we're still trying to plan our trip and where we're going to go. We're thinking we're going to go down to the Fort Pierce Stewart area. We got some friends going down to Jupiter, we think, but we're still working that out. So we'll let you know as the next week comes up here, if we get another podcast out or watch on Facebook, if you're down in that area, Fort Pierce, Stewart, or Jupiter, let us know. Reach out to us, and we'd love to meet up with you if you're going to be on the water that weekend.
Yep, and speaking of Facebook, if you guys aren't friends with us on Facebook, we do have some pictures and a couple of small little videos of the America's Cup on Facebook, so make sure you like us and follow us on Facebook, and you'll see some of those.
And I think that's it for our intro talk here.
We're gonna
come back here in a few minutes with the interview. We'll be right back. All right, so now we are going to go into this week's interview, and this week's interview is really kind of just, it was for my own interest, but hopefully the listeners will find some interesting things in it. I grew up sailing with my family on Lake Erie in southern Michigan, and it was when I was fairly young, and I started thinking, you know, there's a lot about my past and my, you know, was, you know, I learned to sail from my father because our family was into it, but there was a lot I didn't know about spending that time and when we started because I was so young, and I didn't really know his background in sailing. So I thought, you know, it's Father's Day, it would be interesting to talk to my dad and kind of get some of that background. Sometimes you learn things about your parents as they were growing up and how they started and things that you never knew. So I thought it'd be, you know, interesting to have a talk with him, and it was. So here is the interview. So I was thinking about the fact that, you know, when we were sailing as kids, it was mostly probably from the time I was about 4 until the time I was maybe 10 years old. And so I have a lot of memories of sailing, but not a lot of the details of it. And, you know, I never really thought about why you started sailing, you know, some of the boat that you chose and some of those things. So I thought it'd be just kind of fun thinking about Father's Day to call you up and get a little bit of the details on some of our background as a family sailing, because it was a huge part of our lifestyle when we were kids. Pretty much all summer we were sailing in Michigan. So just, you know, want to get some of that background from you. So what originally got you interested in sailing?
Well, I was working in Ohio near Cleveland on a plant, and I think it was a plant manager's son or one of the executives was a college student kind of working as an intern, and he had a Lightning. We became friends, and I went sailing with him several times through that summer. And I had a friend, Cliff Grunman, who had a powerboat. We'd always been kind of going to Put-in Bay and places and fishing with his powerboat. He had like a 25-foot boat. And so I told him about the sailing experience. And so it was fun. And we started renting a sailboat and sailing, and he kind of got into it. And so he traded off his powerboat and he bought a sailboat. He had like a 26-foot, I think, or so. And that got me interested. And he had already, I think, belonged to North Cape Yacht Club. And so I joined North Cape Yacht Club, and I was looking for a boat. And I saw an ad. This guy was just trying to start his dealership for Bristol. And he had only sold one boat, and I think he had to sell three boats to get his dealership kind of certified that he was a dealer. And so he actually gave me a pretty good bargain on a 22-foot Bristol. Sometimes later on, I thought I should have maybe, because the deal was such a good deal, I should have got a little larger boat, but really had a good time on that 22-foot Bristol for quite a few years. But that's actually how I got started into sailing.
Did you ever take any lessons, or you just kind of started with those sailing experiences and just did it on your own?
Well, the sailing lessons was with the young guy that started me on the Lightning. He was a pretty good sailor. You know, he was was part of a college program or not, but I don't remember that, but he was a good sailor, and he taught me pretty good, all the basics.
Right. Do you remember, when you bought the Bristol, do you remember how much you paid for it?
No, I don't.
Making you think, aren't we, Mike?
What year was that? Do you remember what year it was?
I think it was before I was elected business manager for the union, and so it was probably in 1970 or 71.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was born in 68, and I can remember. I think I was probably 3 years old when we picked up the boat. So
yeah, I think
right
so. Yeah, we used to go to Florida every Easter, and we just came back from one of the Florida vacations when they delivered the boat, and actually there was ice on the water, but they put the boat in the water, and we had it in the water every year until I went to Ohio.
Right. And I mean, the Bristol itself, I was looking at pictures today online, and I'll post pictures of just the ones that I found online just to remember the way it was laid out, but had a outboard motor, right?
Yeah, it had a Mercury. I think it was 7.5 horsepower.
Right.
It was pretty good, except Lake Erie, the storms would come in, and you'd get some pretty high waves, sometimes 8 to 10 feet, and you'd get sailing kind of, actually when the wind came up, you'd kind of take the sails down, but trying to power, you're going down a trough of a wave, and you try to go across the wave to get out of the way of another boat coming at you, and that 7.5 horsepower long shaft had come right out of the water, and it got kind of hairy a few times, but we always made it.
I do remember those. Some of those memories are in the back of my brain, sitting in the cabin looking at you in the yellow rain slicker, just getting pounded with rain and seeing the waves up behind the boat and the motor coming out and revving up. And so those were some challenging times.
Yeah, they were.
What was, do you remember what the kind of the worst storm? It seemed like it happened on a regular occasion because they would pop up so quick on the lake. But
yeah,
you remember?
Sometimes we'd see like fishermen or they'd be in a rowboat type. And a couple times we saw them capsized and another sailboat went over and rescued them.
Right.
Yeah, those storms came up. But then there was times it was just like we'd go to Put-in Bay, and there's like a headland. And I remember one time, and we never did get many knockdowns, but I remember one time we were heading over there, and you and Sean had your feet around the stanchions on the lifeline, and we took a knockdown. You guys kind of went right under the water, and the boat popped back up, and you guys said, do it again, do it again. So you never were too scared of the conditions out there.
I think we didn't know any better. We had just grown up with it. We thought it was all normal. I think that's one of the problems now when I go out with Brandy. She gets nervous a lot sooner than I do. I probably should be more nervous, but growing up on Lake Erie and going through all the rough water we did, I think I just got used to it.
Yeah, he tends to forget that I'm not used to heeling sideways and water being so close to the side of the boat. So.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the things that when they were growing up, their mother, her rule was you don't heel a boat too much and you don't get me in the shade.
I agree with her rule, 100%.
Definitely had the tanning rule down. She always wanted to make sure that she was on the sunny side of the boat.
Mm-hmm.
What did I was thinking about that. I mean, what did Mom think of this whole sailing thing when you got started? And did she like it?
Yeah, well, you know, we in those days they didn't have cell phones, and I was running a union, and you know the phone was ringing all the time. So you generally on a Friday morning, your mom would go out, clean the boat, and our yacht club was gated. So we'd go out as soon as I got off work, and we wouldn't go home till Sunday afternoon. So every weekend was we were in a nice private area that there wasn't anybody bothering you, and that was one of the big benefits. And we used to go to this restaurant we liked, Droulard's, basically after work on Friday, and you guys liked turtle soup and turtle and pickerel and perch, and so you guys always liked the weekends. You guys had the sunfish, and I remember you guys would sail up and down the channels, and you almost knew the names of every boat. You'd know if the boat was out, you'd say, well, so such and such boat's out. You knew the name of it, and I used to sail up and down there with you guys, and it was a lot of fun. And then the yacht club was also nice. I mean, you had a lot of friends. You did I remember you guys had spent a week out there just as a, you know, with a kid group, and then you went through.
Yeah, they had sailing camp in the summer.
Yeah,
that was one of the things.
Right.
Yeah, I was curious about that as the yacht club. You know, you think about how much, I guess it's maybe social media and everybody's so connected these days, and social clubs aren't as big as they were in the 70s. You know, you were a member of the yacht club. I remember you were a member of the Moose and the Rod and Gun Club. So, you know, I know that a lot of the yacht clubs are struggling to get the young people in these days. But I can remember big parties that they had at the yacht club. It was a big part of the lifestyle.
Yeah, when I went to, L.A., I was first joined what's called the Windjammers Yacht Club, and it kind of folded, and it merged with the Santa Monica Yacht Club, so it became the Windjammer Santa Monica Yacht Club. And I belonged to that all the time. I was in L.A., but they were struggling. They were having trouble with membership, but, you know, I'm still a member of North Cape Yacht Club. I pay my non-member dues. That club is still going really strong because I get the newsletter, and, I mean, it's really not any different than it was when I first joined it. And in fact, I think it's grown stronger and bigger. There's a lot of very rich people that belong to the yacht club.
Yeah, I think we had one of the smallest boats in the line, our little 22-foot Bristol.
Right.
Yeah, so in the Bristol, I mean, it was a fairly, for its size, a fairly heavy displacement boat, right? It had a big lead keel, kind of not a full keel, but a pretty good-sized keel on the bottom of it, right?
Yeah, I drew 4.5 feet of water. So it was a good boat. It sailed well, very well. It didn't point as well as my current boat, my CNC 27. But to be honest with you, that boat, if we hadn't went to Ohio, and I kept kicking myself after we went because we thought, well, we couldn't sail on the job I was on, but then realized that I could have sailed on the Ohio River. A lot of times I wished I would have kept that boat.
Right. Well, I was thinking about, Brandy and I are very into cruising now. We take our boat all over Florida and to plan the cruise more in the future. But we actually, you know, as a family, the sailboat really was, you know, a lot of people have campers. It was really our camper on the water. And as you said, Mom would pick us up Friday afternoons, and we'd stay on the boat pretty much, you know, a lot of the weekends over the summer because it was cooler by the water and everything. But we actually did some cruising. You know, you look back, you're talking about going to Put-in Bay. We did those trips on a regular basis. And I had to actually look up. I wasn't sure of the distances, so I looked up this weekend. I guess Put-in Bay looked like it was about 25 miles from the yacht club.
Right.
And then we also used to go to Cedar Point, the big amusement park, and that was one of my favorite trips. But
right.
And that was about 40 miles. So that was, they were pretty sizable trips in that.
We went to Bablo, too. Up
oh,
the Detroit
right.
River.
Yeah.
And we'd go over to Amherstburg for supper over there, and we used to tease you guys that we had to get out of there by the time of sundown because the people turned into zombies.
Only way to get them moving, huh?
Yep.
So we had some good times on cruising the boat. I guess we always pretty much stayed in marinas, though, didn't we? You didn't ever really anchor out overnight.
No, we didn't do much anchoring. Always tried to be in a marina, but you know, the thing is, we did have an Airstream trailer, and the problem, that was one of the two of the reasons the sailboat became more exciting, that we had the yacht club, and with the Airstream trailer, we never could find a, you know, you'd have to set the trailer up like on a Wednesday and for the weekends, and it just got to be a hassle, so we sold the Airstream and bought the sailboat.
Yeah, I don't really remember the Airstream, because that was, I was probably really young when you had that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
Well, what about the, I know we also, at some point, I guess this was probably, we'd had the boat a couple years, you decided to build a house in our hometown, and we lived on the boat for a whole summer, right?
Well, part of a summer, yeah.
So it was a couple months, we're all living in a 22
foot. Yeah, at least a couple months, right. Yeah, then when we're building the new house. Yeah, that was kind of neat, too. I mean, it was kind of like when I was working for FEMA, living on a sailboat in Marina Del Rey, that in reality, the only thing you're really doing is sleeping on it. You know, we had some times where it would rain and we were kind of trapped in the boat for a while, but a lot of times we'd just go up to the yacht club.
Yeah, use the yacht club as your house and your shower and everything.
Right, exactly. And that's the way it was in Marina Del Rey. I belonged to a yacht club and raced every Tuesday night, and living on a boat wasn't bad at all. My boat was right down the dock from the bar in the swimming pool. Every night it was happy hour, so that wasn't.
Yeah,
it was good times.
I mean, how long did you live in Marina Del Rey on the boat? I couldn't remember how long that was.
I actually lived on a boat for about 2 years.
Oh, okay. Did you ever? I couldn't remember. I know we did a little bit of racing with other people in the yacht club, but did you ever do much racing when you were younger and just joining the yacht club?
On the Bristol, we used to do a weekend thing that was like, remember, they threw balloons at each other, water balloons.
Right.
It was kind of like
that
a fun race type thing.
The and one then, annual yeah. race that our family
yeah.
did every year was the balloon, essentially a balloon battle race where you blew up water balloons and you shot
right.
across the other boats. And that kept my brother and I entertained during the race.
Yeah, that was about the only race we did with the Bristol. I mean, when we went out sailing, we tried to beat people, you know. That was an official racing.
Right.
And we used to do pretty good with that 22-footer.
Right.
But I raced pretty regular with a 27-foot. Used to race over from Marina Del Rey to out to the island. We'd go to
Catalina.
The Twin Harbors, yeah, Catalina, Ireland.
Right.
And did have a Del Rey Yacht Club had a big picnic area there. We'd have a big barbecue and we'd race back on Sunday. We'd race over on Saturday, race back on Sunday. Those were fun races. We'd race down to Long Beach, too. That was another good race. We'd race down to the yacht club down there and then race back. I did quite a bit of racing. I remember one time I was in a race, and we were catching, there was only two of us in the race, and I was catching the boat ahead of me, and it was a McGregor, and the wind changed, and we had to go kind of a wing and wing, and this lady, I heard her on the boat ahead of us because we were getting real close, and she says, "What's that noise?" And her husband says, "He's trying to get his spinnaker pole off the deck, and it's frozen on there." And they kind of laughed, and we never did catch him. I never got the spinnaker pole off the deck. Had to do
frozen in place.
Salting, frozen in place, yep. But I probably would have beat him if I could have got it off the deck. But I came
I don't know if you just mentioned it. Didn't you did a race down to San Diego or whatever?
San Diego. I did that like 5 times.
Yeah.
And the last couple, 3 times, I was on a Catalina 42. We had some good times on those races. A
right.
Big party down to San Diego Yacht Club.
So did you, you know, I really thought about it. I mean, you read a lot of sailing books and stuff as kids. Did you, I don't know if maybe you read like the parties and things. Who do you remember reading when we were kids?
I read pretty much all of their books. I read almost every sailing book that was published.
And did you ever have kind of a dream in saying, oh, someday I'd like to buy a bigger boat and sail down the island?
We were going to buy a Fantasia 34. I originally was interested in a Valiant 40, and then I saw the Fantasia. They came out. In fact, I saw one a few years ago that was in Catalina in the harbor at Avalon, and I still love the looks of that boat. We took a trip to Wisconsin or somewhere.
It was up near Green Bay, I think I remember that.
Yeah, it was up near Green Bay. We went up and looked at one, went through it. And I would have liked to have bought that boat. And just for some reason, didn't get a chance to buy it.
So if you would have bought that boat, was Mom on board to do some more extensive cruising?
Exactly, yes. That was the plan.
Wow, I didn't even know that. I just assumed you wanted a bigger boat. I never realized that you thought about actually taking it somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Long distance.
Yeah, we talked about it. She had wanted to go back to the West Coast. That was one of the things that we were thinking about. Is it was like a long range plan of ending back up in on the West Coast. Although we did end up back on the West Coast, but it was not based on a sailboat.
So at one point you said if we buy the bigger boat, you were going to sail all the way back around to maybe the Pacific Northwest.
Yep.
Oh wow, these are the things I learned, and I had no idea. That's funny. Never knew that.
Yeah, that Fantasia was a motor cruiser. It had a pretty good size engine on it. We figured we could, and as I understand, it was good for heavy seas. So we figured we could go almost anywhere with it.
Right. And then we, you know, after high school, you and Mom moved out to San Diego, and I know you never really had a sailboat in San Diego, but you made friends that had some sailboats, and then. I think right around the time I was leaving to move back east after college, you and Sean got involved in the America's Cup, right?
Yeah. Sean did two of them. He did the first one. It was posted on his bulletin board at his law school that he's going to, and they got involved in it, and he thought it was such a blast. He tucked me into it on the second one. And it was a lot of fun. We had these 20-foot boats, power boats, and we followed the outside of the course to keep any boats off of the course. And then there was a lot of camaraderie after the races. We'd all race back into the harbor, and we drank a lot of Australian beer because they were one of the yacht clubs that were in the race, and they'd always send beer over to us. And
that's always a bonus.
One of the perks of being the
race course
support.
And we got to know some of those sailors too. They kind of would hang out at this one bar, and everybody come in and just have a good time. It was a lot of fun.
Another thing I was curious about, you know, we grew up. You were always you were involved in the pipefitter union. You were a professional welder and instructor and. We had this big steel barn behind the house that, you know, we're always building, you know, things and welding. Did you ever think at any point, you know, looking at reading the parties books and things, you know, hey, I'd like to maybe build a boat?
Remember the old steel boat that I hauled home and I was going to work on?
Right. I remember that one, but I wasn't sure if you ever said I want to build one from scratch.
No, I actually, there was several projects that I kind of kept a close eye on. In different areas, there was a couple guys that were building they were dressing out like a 50-foot. Remember them, the two guys that kind of out where that house I bought by the lake?
Right.
They had a boat, a couple boats down from us originally, and then they built this 50-foot boat. So I kind of watched them build out that 50-foot boat. And then there was a guy in Oregon that was building a concrete boat.
Ferro cement, right? I think I remember that.
Yeah, you remember that? That was,
yeah, I remember that.
That was a big boat, too. And they were building it like in the backyard thing.
Right.
And we saw it. We'd go out to visit your grandpa, and I'd stop and see them every year. It took him several years to build that boat.
Yeah, I was wondering.
I was always interested in it, but not interested in doing it. I didn't want
to. It's always better to see somebody else do it, right?
Right. Exactly.
I think the people that listen to the podcast, well, that's kind of funny because I say the same thing all the time. I love talking to these people that do it. I think it's such a big accomplishment, but I just don't think I have no desire to do it unless I could pay somebody to do all the work and I just show up once in a while and say, that looks good.
And all those people who did build the boat themselves say they will never do it again.
Absolutely. Well, too easy to buy a new one.
The woodwork and the fine detail that has to go into some of that, you know, joinery in the trim in the boats, that takes a lot of skill.
Definitely.
And another thing is, like, there was this guy just recently, just a couple years ago, he built a catamaran. It was a beautiful boat, and we went sailing on it. I mean, he was doing 10 knots in that thing, and he was like, I don't want to push it too hard. This is still like a shakedown cruise, but I'm thinking we were having a blast on that boat. That guy put a lot of effort into it, but he sure came out with a fabulous boat. So there is rewards to building them, but that's just not for me.
Yeah, a lot of pride, but like you said, there's just so much detail when you look at these boats. Everything you got to do from the rigging to the fit out.
And his boat, yep. Even though he built it himself, it looked very, very professional.
Right. Well, and there's so many people that start it, and they just, when they get so far into it in so many years, they realize that it's never going to be able to get it finished. So there's a lot of those stories around, too.
Yeah, there was, I think, a ferro cement boat that I remember someone was building it in Monroe, and I don't think that boat ever got finished. I kept seeing that. I mean, they had all this rebar kind of tied up, and that thing was like a skeleton there for several years, and you could see that rebar just rusting. That was kind of a shame.
Right. And so now your current boats, you actually have two boats. You've got the CNC, what is it, the 27?
CNC 27. And then I have a Blue Jay.
Trailer bolt. Is that a
trailer bolt? The Blue Jay is, it's like a miniature Lightning. Sparkman and Stevens to design.
And that's one that Sean refurbished.
Yeah, it's a nice little boat. Sails well.
Right. Well, you know, that's what I really wanted to talk to you, Dan, and get kind of this background. You know, today's Father's Day, so I want to say Happy Father's Day. And I love you, and I appreciate, you know, the childhood we had. We look at now at how much brandy iron to sailing, and we look at it being part of our future. And I look back at our childhood and all those summers we had and all the, you know, the trips we did out in the sailboat and just spending time on the water, you know, at the yacht club, playing in the water and sailing. It's just, it was a great childhood, and I appreciate everything you and Mom did to put that together for us and have those great times.
Yeah, she did a lot of work to keep that boat ready most of the time. I mean, she did more work than I did. I was kind of a workaholic.
Well, and I do remember, you know, I think you had built the trailer for the boat, and you always stored it at the house in the barn.
Yep,
exactly. And I think you did, you always did all the bottom jobs, because I can remember we had, the bottom was a green paint.
Right.
And you would, you know, do all the sanding, and you look like the Incredible Hulk by the time you were done with it.
Yeah, that was a great boat.
So we had a lot of great times on it, and I really appreciate it, Dan. So happy Father's Day.
Okay.
I hope you have a great weekend.
Same to you.
Bye, Mike. Thanks a lot.
Bye, Dan.
Bye.
Well, I am still smiling about doing this interview with my dad, and hopefully you all enjoyed it too. But like I said, it was really for my a little bit for my own interest. And, you know, I definitely learned a few things that I didn't remember and that I didn't even know about my dad. I mean, the fact that my parents had looked at the larger cruising boat, I can remember them shopping and looking at some bigger boats, but never knew that they had some kind of plan to possibly sail from Michigan to the West Coast. And that was really surprising. I just never really thought about that.
Just shows that the dream of doing this is all over the place, you know, not just with us, but in your past,
I guess
too.
It's in my blood. That,
absolutely.
I remember you always read a lot of cruising stories and things, but I just thought that, you know, you're into sailing, that's what you read. I just never thought that they had ever had any desire. They never talked about, hey, we'd like to get a boat and cruise down through the islands or anything.
Right.
Probably didn't want to give us false hope.
Didn't want to make you think you're
get
going
us out of the Michigan winters. We were always excited to go somewhere warm, but it was also interesting. You know, I really was curious because as we've done this podcast, we've read some of these stories about the heyday of sailing in the 70s and 80s, and I experienced that as being a kid in the yacht club, and didn't really think about how much it's really the sport of sailing has declined since then. But you know, it was really part of that and saw the support and everything in our yacht club. So it was interesting to talk to him a little bit about that. And I am very fortunate to have the childhood I did and all the memories. And so I really thank my dad and my mom for everything they did to give us a great childhood, give us those experiences. You know, some families are into RVs. Mine was into sailing, and it was just something unique that we did, and we had great times doing it. So.
Yeah, I thought it was a great interview. You know, watching you listen to your dad, I could see the twinkle of you enjoying his stories of it. So I thought it was great. I did not do that type of traveling when I was little. I mean, the most we did was jump on a bus or get in a car and travel to our home state of West Virginia, and that was about it for traveling unless we stayed in the state of Florida. So it was cool hearing about your childhood and how things happened and how you guys started off. So
yeah, I remember they had an Airstream at one point, but I didn't know he considered that, you know, that they were using that for, you know, big camping trips or anything, or that was kind of the decision point to go to sailing.
Right.
And so that was kind of interesting. I guess it's a probably a lesson for all of us. I said this was a bit of my own interest, and I also wanted to get him on audio talking about something, you know, talking about sailing, because it's something that'll last forever. So, you know, it's probably a good thing for everyone to do. Get a tape recorder out, go talk to your parents, your grandparents, ask them about how they started in their career, which college they chose, some of those experiences, and you'll be amazed what you'll get out of them. And your grandkids and your great-grandkids will really enjoy it, too. You know, we're doing so much with genealogy and following, but it's interesting to hear the actual person talking about their lives. So, and, you know, happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. And Father's Day passed this weekend, but, you know, I will say that if you're a father and you're taking your kids out sailing or some of the neighborhood kids out sailing, it is creating great memories. It did for me, and you're doing it for those kids. And in this day and age where they're so distracted with smartphones and games and all these other things, they may complain and go, oh, I don't want to go out and sit on the sailboat. But usually find as soon as you get them out on the water and they're playing in the water, they're fishing, they're having a great time. They don't need any of those things.
Completely forget about that stuff.
They do. And they will always remember those days that you spent on the water, some funny thing that happened, somebody fell in the water, something they saw when they were out in the boat. So.
Yep, and we kind of came to that conclusion as well this weekend with Christian, taking him to Chicago. We're trying to get him to get the travel bug while he's young, and so we decided to take him to Chicago with us. The plan wasn't at first to have him with us, and when we took him, he had a great time. I think he stayed pretty interested most of the time. I think there was a few times he wished we would just sit down and stop walking. But he came home, and a couple of days later, him and a buddy has planned a road trip to go to Arkansas, to one of the national parks out there. So that was good to see, good to hear. So, yeah, keep your kids moving is all I got to say.
Yep, and it does create great memories for them. So up next, we have the sailing news. We'll be right back. Okay, now we're going to cover our sailing news for the week, and we've stacked up quite a few good stories here that came up. One of the ones that I pulled a while back that I just thought was kind of funny is, you know, we always hear about cruisers. You worry about the use of water on the boat. And I know people think, well, I'm in my house. I take a shower every day. If I get on the cruise, you know, if I start cruising, you know, I want a water maker. I want to be able to take a shower every day. You know, I don't want to be stinky or uncomfortable. So I found this article that says, essentially, you really shouldn't shower every day. It's not that important.
Well, it's just like washing your hair every day. It's not necessary.
Yeah. So this expert says, Dr. Elaine Larson, an infectious disease expert at Columbia University School of Nursing, she said that showering every day is not necessary, and it actually can be bad for your skin. It says that people think that they're showering to be cleaner, but bacteriologically, well, that's a tough word. Should have read that one a couple times before I started this one. That's not the case. In fact, the more showers you have, you can cause more problems because you strip away the essential oils in your skin, and it can increase the chance of infection as you're taking away, you can allow germs to enter the cracked skin, it says. So they actually say, you know, a lot of areas, I guess, they did a survey in Britain, and most, like over a third of people in Britain don't shower every day. And
I'm gonna stay with no comment.
So it's you don't need to shower every day.
All right,
I think, you know, they say twice a week, you know, maybe more than that's probably good.
Okay, you don't have to shower every week, but if you can smell yourself.
It doesn't say every week, it says
every day. I apologize. If you don't shower every day, but you get to that day that you still haven't showered, and you have a little bit of an odor, I don't think reapplying deodorant is going to work. Maybe you should have applied deodorant to begin with, but you need to take another shower. Do not think that we're getting on our boat and not being able to shower as often as needed.
I think the key to not showering is you have to match the not showering the people you're around. Because if you're all not showering, then you all smell and nobody's going to know. Or if you're showering on the same day.
We're talking about this, and the key thing is we're going to be on a boat. The boat is what? It's on the water. So you don't necessarily have to have...
Just jump in the water.
Right. You don't have to have fresh water to make yourself fresh. You need to just have water in general. So
that is one of the advantages of boating rather than camping.
Oh, definitely.
If you spend 5 days camping and you don't shower, by the end of those 5 days, you smell like a campfire and you're getting pretty ripe.
Oh my gosh, what am I going to tell my kid to do for showering? These are two 19-year-olds who has never done a trip probably by themselves.
They're going to be in campgrounds. They're going to be fine.
Oh goodness, they're going to stink.
But if you're rustic camping for 5 days or even a long weekend,
you need
and
a
you're
shower.
Not, and you're, but there's no showers around if you're rustic camping. You're going to be smelly. As opposed to if we do rustic boating, which we often do on our boat, we either use our solar shower, but even if we didn't have the solar shower, we're jumping in the salt water, and that gets a lot of the stink off.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I'm not sure if that story was irrelevant. You just thought it was funny, I'm sure.
I don't know why I even bothered saying that one. So.
Just use deodorant, people.
Okay, our next story is about one of these expedition-type sailing adventures. This one's going to, I think it just started. Yeah, it just started. British explorer David Hempelman Adams has set off on an expedition to circumnavigate the North Pole in one season. And he's got a seven-person crew with him. They're in an aluminum boat, and I think they just left a week or so ago. And they're planning to go all the way around the North Pole in one season. And previously, this would have been very hard, but due to climate warming and the reduced ice packs, they think it's possible. So they're going to try to get this done, and they say that they hope to finish in October, because I imagine anything after October, the ice starts forming again, and you're going to be stuck. They thought this would really highlight the fact that the climate has changed so much. Because he said this guy has done all kinds of adventures across the North and South Poles, And he said since 1982, when he was first there, there is a lot less pack ice. So he really feels that they're going to be able to get around this. They're going to go through both the northeast and northwest passages. It's a 14,000-mile journey they'll go on to get all the way around the North Pole.
Is sailing around the North Pole common? I mean, I don't mean to sound ignorant, but...
No, it's essentially, it's been done, but it's never been done in one season. What people have done is they take off and they go through maybe the Northwest Passage, and then they get stuck in some ice or some little town in the Arctic, and they have to wait until the next season to get their boat out of the ice, and then they keep going and do it. You know, there's people that have circumnavigated all around. They've just not done it in 1 year. Because you got to make it all the way around the circle before the ice forms again.
Does it say how big his boat is? You know, I'm always curious.
I saw a picture of it. It looked like about a 50, 60-foot boat.
Oh, good stuff.
The one interesting thing in the story, though, is that the youngest crew member out of their 7 crew members is 14 years old. 14-year-old Ben Edwards from Cambridge is on the boat. If they're successful in doing this, just to sail around the North Pole, he will be the youngest person to have ever done that. He's going to beat the next person by about 20 years.
Wow, that's cool. That'll be a huge accomplishment for a 14-year-old.
Ben says, you know, that'd be great, but he's just looking forward to seeing a polar bear.
Coming from a 14-year-old, you got to love their innocence.
Yep. So we've got another story that's somewhat climate-related. This was a Cruising World interview I think I found online, and they interviewed Dr. Philip Roche. He is a climate modeler. Just the top experts. He's from the Pacific Northwest National Laboratory in Richmond, Washington, and he's actually a sailor too. So they talked about it, all these different things that are happening with the climate, and asked him a lot of really detailed questions. Essentially, most cruisers cruise kind of around that center of the globe where the trade winds are, and how are those things going to be affected? And you really have to read the article to dig into. He gets really into detail about how all these things are related. And the net of the article really comes out that everything that happens, whether it happens at our equator or at the poles, the effect goes all the way across the Earth. And we all know that. I mean, everything we do. But it really does, the way he explains it, shows how these different climate changes in the different areas and how the melting of ice caps is changing things. So the last question that they asked him, I thought I'd read here just because I thought it was an interesting answer. They asked, if you were planning a long-distance cruise with your family, which feature of climate change would loom large? And he responded that as the planet continues to warm, there's an expectation that wave heights at the mid-latitudes, where a lot of people sail through the tropics, will continue to get higher. Tropical cyclones and hurricanes will get stronger, and an overall pattern says that wet places are going to get wetter and dry places are going to get drier. And he said, 10 years ago, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change reports weren't terribly concerned about sea level rise, but they are now. And he says it shows how fast things have changed. He says as more ice melts in the polar regions and the oceans warm, the volume of water not only increases, but the water itself expands. And we used to think that low-lying island groups like the Maldives in the Indian Ocean were safe through the end of the century, and they no longer think that. The Maldives likely will be underwater in the next few decades.
We got to get there.
Yeah. And it's sad. I'm going to post a picture of the Maldives. If you've never seen a picture of it in the... I'll put it in the show notes. They have big cities along the coastline in the Maldives. There's high concentrations of population. It almost looks like, a New York City sitting on the edge of a shoreline. Now, it's very tropical, and there's beautiful areas in the Maldives, too, but they have huge amounts of populations in these coastlines, and it's all going to be underwater. So, it's another reason.
It means we'll be getting more people in Florida.
Yeah. Well, Florida's going to be underwater, too. We could have oceanfront property in Orlando.
Hey.
My property value is going up already. But just goes to show you, get out there as soon as you can, because some of these areas around the world are going to be gone and underwater. The next story I found is another one of these kind of adventure racing story. This is somebody that's been on the Clipper Round the World race. His name is Simon Parker, and he was on the leg of the race that went from, I think it was in somewhere in China, to Seattle. So he crossed the Pacific with the race. You know, they can sign up for different legs, and he chose that leg. Mm-hmm. It's also the leg that the lady had died on. And it tends to be one of the rougher ones, because the Pacific can be, especially that northern Pacific, can be pretty rough. So he completes that. He arrives in Seattle, and he probably already had this planned out and decided to do this challenge, that as the race continued from Seattle down around the United States, and the next stop was in New Jersey, that he was going to ride a bicycle across the United States and race them.
See if he could get there before the boat
does? See if he could get there before them.
Oh, wow.
So 3,750 miles. He hops on a bicycle. He's got to go, you know, across the Rocky Mountains, the Appalachian Mountains. He goes through, you know, Washington, Idaho, Montana, South Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and finally New Jersey. He has no support crew. He does this in 48 days and arrives the day before the Clipper race comes into port and meets up with his fellow sailing companions, former crew.
That's insane.
Yeah. He said he dealt with all kinds of conditions. They had a searing heat. He had trade winds, all kinds of headwinds. This was just, they just got into New York. So it's just
spring.
Spring. That he's going through this. The tropical storm Colin that came through, he was battling that. He had freezing rain and hail. You know, he actually said, I think towards the end, he was trying to make sure he made it there. A policeman actually kind of forgave him for getting on the highway and riding the shoulder in the final few miles. Highway 78 must be in New Jersey. You know, you're not supposed to ride your bicycle on the highway,
right.
But he's like, I got to get there. So he couldn't take surfer streets. He hops on the highway.
And forget these stop signs.
And the policeman says, oh, okay, you've gone all the way across the country. I'll let you do it. But it was, and I guess it was interesting. They had a thing in here that 40% of the Clipper race crews are also cyclists. But he was not. He was barely a cyclist before he tried this. And he had never sailed before getting on the Pacific leg.
He's got lots of firsts on that.
Yeah. So not only that, now he meets up with the crew in New Jersey, and he's getting back on the boat to go across the Atlantic. So he went across the Pacific on the sailboat, rode across the United States on his bicycle. He's hopping back on the boat, and then he's going to go over to, it arrives in Northern Ireland is the next stop across the Atlantic. He's going to get back on his cycle, and then he's going to cycle to the Netherlands, which is where the finishing leg of the race. So he's got to beat the boats again.
Do you think he stunk? Do you think he took a shower?
I bet you
he didn't shower for a full week, many days.
I bet you he skipped a few days.
I'm going to say so. Maybe he found a lake and just decided to jump in it.
He was by himself for 48 days. He had no support crew.
He's on a boat again.
Well, I'm sure he took a shower before he got on the boat. They wouldn't have allowed him. His crew wouldn't allow him on the boat. So, so he's going to do this. And then he's going to hop back on the boat in the Netherlands. And that's the final leg. So he'll get to be part of the parade coming in. So.
And where does it end?
It ends
in
London.
London.
Yeah. They sail up the River Thames in London with all of the hoopla.
Cool. Wow, that's a crazy man.
Yep. So he's taking on some big adventure there. But I just thought it was fun that
Does it say how old he was?
But I think, you know, to calculate that he had done this and that he beat them by one day, I'm sure he had some extra flexibility in there, so maybe took a day off here and there in the racing across on the bicycle, but he made it there the day before they showed up.
I'm sure he had an idea of how long it would actually take the boat, for sure.
Things can go wrong.
Constantly going, so.
Yeah. But it was pretty cool.
That's interesting.
And our last story is pretty unique. This guy, Garik Soudi, he's 24 years old, and I think he's trying to circumnavigate on his sailboat. And he started in the Canary Islands, I believe. Yes, the Canary Islands is where he was his starting point. And he thought about taking a pet along, and, you know, dogs are a lot to deal with. He thought about a cat, and he said, I thought cat would be too much trouble, too. So when he's in the Caribbean Islands, he sees this hen, I don't know, walking down the road or whatever, and he goes, that would be the perfect pet. And you know what? I think this guy's a little bit crazy, but he's also really smart, because he gets the hen on the boat, and what he thought is, well, if I got this hen on the boat, maybe the hen will lay eggs. Well, everybody told him, you're crazy. The hen's going to go be nervous and freaked out by being on the boat. You're not going to get a single egg. It's probably going to go crazy and run off the boat and end up passing away from stress. Well, he gets this hen on the boat, and they take off. I think they went up towards the Arctic or whatever. And immediately, the hen kind of settles in on board, figures out its sea legs, its little sea feet, and it starts laying eggs. He's getting like 6 eggs a week, I think. And it's like the perfect companion to him. He said when they left, he goes, I didn't speak any Spanish and she didn't speak any French, but we got along fine.
Oh, God. So in other words, he was having conversations with himself.
Oh, he's talking to the hen.
Yeah?
But,
how'd that work out, I wonder?
Yeah, so he's on a 39-foot boat that him and Monique, the hen, are hanging out on. And, you know, he said it took her a little while to get her sea legs, and that there was a couple times when it looked like she might go overboard, but then she always seemed to regain her footing. And now he's getting to be more careful in putting her down below if it gets a little crazy. And
don't hens kind of fly, like, a little bit? Like,
they do, but they're not going to fly off the boat into the water. They're smart enough to know, well, I don't want to do all that, because they don't want to go in the water, so.
Hmm.
But he says the good thing is, compared to people, she doesn't complain at all. And, you know, she says she follows me everywhere. She doesn't create any problems. All I need to do is shout Monique, and she comes right to him, sits on him, gives him company. And his last line here is, he says, but I won't lie, she can get on my nerves sometimes.
Yeah, you think? With all the pecking and heckling that she does? Now, I think I did see a story about this, but he, like, takes this animal, this hen, everywhere, like offshore.
Oh yeah,
I'll
post the video. He's got He takes her paddle boarding. He's got her surfing in the waves with paddle boarding, and he.
Well, don't you have to check animals in when you go into different countries? Like, how? What do you say to that new country? Yes, no, sir. I don't have a dog. No, I don't have a cat. No, I have a hen.
He says so far all he has had to check into is Canada, which they had no problem with it. But he says, he acknowledges it may not be so easy next time, and he said, you know, he's not really worried about that. If they have to break up, then that's what's going to happen.
And he'll eat her? He'll have him dinner? I mean, how is this going to end?
Oh, I didn't think about that. What if he gets, you know, remember the Bugs Bunny cartoon where they're stranded on the boat and they start looking at each other and it looks
like
a cooked turkey? Yeah.
That's awful.
He's got a meal.
What happened to him? Did she flop over? No, she was my Thanksgiving dinner.
Well, it serves multi-purpose. If you need to do it, then you've got a nice chicken dinner. So that is it for the sailing news. We'll be right back with the product of the week. Okay, up now we've got our product of the week, and this week we are talking about our main source of power generation on the boat, and that is our Honda 2000 EU2000i generator.
And I'm so surprised that this has not been one of our products of the week before, because we use this almost every single trip. So.
It was not even in our store, which surprised me, because I'd go through the entire boat and think of all the stuff we use, and it was not on there. And the reason I remembered it is a good friend of ours who also has a sailboat contacted me this week to say, hey, what's your Amazon store link? Because I'm thinking about buying a Honda generator. And he asked me, you know, is this a good price? Which on Amazon, it's $999. And if anybody's ever bought one of these before, you know that the price is always $999, no matter where you go, unless somebody wants to try and charge you more. But that's the best price you're ever going to get on a Honda 2000i generator, period. It's just always
well, it's
price.
An amazing product. So
they
I
never
don't know if
the
that's
price.
Good, if that's a bad price because I'm a girl, but it's an amazing product.
Yeah.
So
it runs. It's really the most popular portable generator. There's other ones out there, but if you're going to go cruising with something and you want something that's likely got parts all over the world, these are so popular. They're everywhere. And we've been using it for 6 years, well over 100 nights on Anchor, and it just runs.
Yeah, we usually, if we're at Anchor, we usually get it going around, I would say, 8 or 9 o'clock, because in Florida, bugs become awful. The humidity sets in, so we get it going to get the boat, you know, cooling off for us, and it goes.
Yeah, it lasts about 9 hours on a tank of gas, which I was surprised in the details here. It says it'll do 3.4 hours at the rated. Oh, that, I'm sorry, I read it wrong. Yeah, so if you're at top load, it's about 3.4 hours. It says 8 hours at a quarter load. We get about 9 hours running our air conditioner, which I got to imagine.
Does that just mean that our boat runs on very low energy?
No, it just means, I mean, an air conditioner, it's a 1,500 BTU air conditioner that I would think it would, 5,500 BTU air conditioner. And I would think it would pick up quite a bit of energy, but, you know, it lasts about 9 hours on the tank. And then I'm also going to put in the show notes, our other product that I recommend if you get one of these is a tank extender. So we have a custom cap that this guy makes on eBay that you put, essentially the Honda generator cap. He just buys extra ones, and he runs a siphon hose off of that to an external fuel tank. And so you can run indefinitely. I mean, you put a 5-gallon tank on there, you're going to get, you know, several days worth of power. But we only use that really if it's raining, and
yeah,
we're going to get stuck in the cabin at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's going to be running all the way until the next morning. That's the only time we've ever had to use it. But great product. They just run. They're very low maintenance. I've never had an issue with ours. You pull it a couple times, it's started. I mean, it just runs. So $999 with free shipping off Amazon. If you do buy one, please buy it through our Amazon link. That would be a great commission for us. Cost you the same. We'll get a little credit on that. And like anything, if anything you buy on Amazon, you can look at either our store on our website that has all the products that we use and recommend at thesailingroad.com. Just look at the top for our Amazon store. And then there's also one there that says Amazon link. You just click on that, and then takes you right into Amazon. Anything you buy on Amazon, we get a little commission for that.
Easiest thing to do with that is just bookmark it to your menu bar, and then anytime you go into Amazon, you're already in our link, and you are ready to just start shopping on your own account.
Right. And we've done the same thing on smartphones, so all of our friends have it bookmarked on their smartphone. You just replace the Amazon app tab with the link for our site, and it takes you right into the app and on your phone, and everything works the same.
Yep.
Just buy and it works. So that is it for Amazon. Social media, definitely follow us out there. A lot of times when we take this little break over summer here where we had our vacation, we're still posting things up on our Facebook page, and I'll keep you in tune with what we're doing, when we're running around. So follow us on Facebook.
Yeah, if you don't hear from us for a while, like this past month, follow us on Facebook and you'll know exactly where we've been and what we've been doing, because I'm a Facebook junkie. So we're definitely on Facebook. I'm trying to get better with Instagram and YouTube. We still have our channel, but not much is really going on there. But you can always subscribe to it and get the updates when we finally start getting going on that.
Yeah.
So,
well, Instagram, I tend to post on there. And definitely, you know, it's summertime. When we started talking about Instagram, it was over the winter. Nobody had their boats out in most areas of the country. So now that you're out sailing and you hear this podcast, just remember when you're on Instagram, tag some of your pictures, your family picture out on the sailboat. Tag it with hashtag the sailing road, and it'll show up in our little listener page.
Yep, we just got a couple not too long ago.
Yeah.
So that's always fun to see you guys.
Yeah, we always want to see who's listening and where you're at and what you're doing. So post some pictures out there. We'd really love to see it. And definitely help us continue to spread the word on the podcast. Now that it's summertime, you're hanging out with all your sailing friends. Tell them about it. Show them how to use it on their phone. And we haven't really asked for any iTunes reviews lately.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And we have not had one in a long time. So
we haven't.
If you are new to listening to the podcast, or if you never put a review out for us on iTunes, go out there and put in a 5-star review. Really makes a big difference.
Not just put the review, but like us as well.
Yeah. So, and subscribe, you mean?
Subscribe, yes.
Yeah. So you subscribe to the show and then put a review out there. It just gives other people indication that, you know, people are listening, they like the content. And if you like the show, you can also help us out and support us on Patreon. We're going to be updating that here soon. And then we also have a tip jar link on the sailingroad.com. So you can either go to either of those areas and help us out. It really makes a big difference in supporting the podcast.
Just keeps us knowing that you're listening.
And we have another problem, and maybe this is our problem because we disappeared for a while over summer, but we have not had an email in a long time.
I know we haven't. We love the emails.
So we'd love to hear from you. Please send us emails. Just tell us somebody's out there listening to this. And
yeah, if you have any product recommendations that you are starting to use on the boat now that it's definitely summer boating season, we throw it once again on our Amazon link so everybody can see it. So.
And even if you're mad and you just want to send us an email and say,
right?
I'm mad.
Out. We were gone for a month.
Because you guys left and you haven't done any podcasts. Come on.
Well, we're back. We're back. We promise we're back. So
email us crew@thesailingroad.com. crew@thesailingroad.com. Send us emails. We'd love to hear from you. So that is it for this week. Thanks for listening. And we really appreciate everybody's support. And we hope to see you on the water soon.
Later, everybody.